This is Talk To Me, the official podcast of MetalNexus.net. Your hosts, Joshua Toomey and John Drake, bring you epic rants, anecdotes, and interviews with heavy hitters from hardcore
A New Life Begins!
To hair metal. This is Talk To Me.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Talk To Me on MetalNexus.net. This is episode 122. The guest this week is Matt Hafey of Trivium. They have a great new album out called The Sin and the Sentence. Make sure you can go and pick that up. Make sure you're streaming that on your Spotify or picking it up on Google Play, iTunes, wherever you get it, or go buy a physical copy. As always, I am Joshua Toomey and joined by my friend from the north,
John Drake. What's up, everybody?
Oh, man. How do you like that? The sound of that Talk To Me on MetalNexus.net?
It's very cool, man. I'm pumped up for that. That's really cool for us, and hopefully it's really cool for them, too. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, man. They have the tab now, so if you go to MetalNexus.net/talk-to-me, that's where you can find all of the great episodes of the podcast, and this being the inaugural episode of Talk To Me, the Metal Nexus podcast. Pretty excited, man. I've been wanting to find I've been trying to do talktomepod.com, and it's hard to do all that stuff by yourself, you know, write articles and release stuff, and I'm just not a writer. Like, I can put words together, but I'm just not very comfortable being a writer. So when Fist and I got together and we're talking about, you know, merging the two together, it just kind of seemed like a natural fit. It wasn't forced upon anything, and man, I'm really excited to be a part of the Metal Nexus family.
I am too. I know from my experience with the Nerf Herder Council that getting to be part of a network can really help expand your listenership and exposure and all that, which is, of course, how you spread the word. So for Metal Nexus to invite us to be a part of what they're doing, I know I really appreciate it, and it's going to be really cool. I'm really looking forward to partnering up with them.
Absolutely. And also, speaking of spreading the word, let's go ahead and bust out our iTunes review. If you're new to the podcast, which I'm assuming a lot of people will be coming in new, if you want your iTunes review read on the podcast, make sure to head over, leave a nice 5-star rating, a nice 5-star review, and it will be read on an upcoming episode. And it helps because, you know, if you subscribe to the podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, download the podcast, all of that goes into the algorithm that puts Talk To Me into the charts. And over the last week, we hit the highest I saw it go was 180 on the music charts. And if you took out all of the other genres of music, just metal podcasts, I think it was top 5 at one point. It was pretty awesome to see.
Damn, that's awesome.
Yeah, because the music category is all music. There's rap podcasts and Christian podcasts and all, you know, so if you broke it down, yeah, it was like us. I think it was like Eddie Trunk, The Josta Show, Heavy Metal Historian, Us, and then Metal Injection. So yeah, that was like the top 5 music podcasts last week. So thank you to everyone out there that leaves
it's a damn
rating.
Good company.
Right? Two of those people were just on the podcast, being Eddie Trunk and I guess Josta gave us a shout out, so that was always nice, and we'll get to that momentarily. But let's bust into this.
I was going to say there's a story there.
iTunes review here from Axeman_12656. 5 stars, awesome stuff, excited about the merger with Metal Nexus is the title. Excellent show, I can't wait to hear more. Short and sweet, I love it, and Metal Nexus reference in there too.
Right. Perfect. 5-star review for our first episode with Metal Nexus.
Yeah, so make sure you guys are heading over to your iTunes, leaving that nice 5-star rating, nice 5-star review. It will be read on an upcoming episode. And another thing we like to do over here at the Talk To Me compound is shout-outs for sharing. That is shout-outs for sharing on Facebook and Twitter. So if you see this pop up in your Facebook timeline, your Twitter feed, hit that share button, hit that retweet button, and you will get a shout-out on the next episode of the Talk To Me podcast. So for shouting out the Jared Montague of formerly of Taproot, now author extraordinaire episode, goes to these fine fellows. Danny Gilliatt, Mike Grabowski, Eric Moore, and the Saturday Night Jam Session podcast, which may or may not ever come back. Eric, make sure it comes back. Donnie Greenwell, Joel Baggett, Discography Discussion Podcast, Growing Up Rock Podcast. There's a couple of names on here that are going to be rough. I've never seen before. Buffy Trelew Hawk and Victoria Kuznetsova. Kuznetsova. It's always fun. Jared Mon.
I got to have you send these over to me before you do.
Yeah.
Working in the medical field, I'm used to really weird names.
Yeah, when I saw those,
so I'll have to take a look at them before we.
I saw those two people share it over the week. I was like, oh, that's gonna be fun to say. Victoria Kuznetsova, Buffy Trelo. It's like it's T R E A L O U T. So I'm assuming that's like a French thing. So it's like a Trello. I don't know.
Trello probably.
And Jared Montague himself shared it. Zach from the Bleed TV podcast. The True Rockstars page, which is the book. Taproot shared it. Westfall shared it. Eric Evo Durant. I'm assuming maybe Kevin Durant's little brother. Eric Daly. Andrew Humphrey.
We don't like that name around here.
And our good friends over at the PRP.com did a little nice little article on it and shared it that way too. So thank you guys for sharing. And if you want a shout out on a future episode, make sure to hit that share button, hit that retweet button, and we will shout you out.
Thanks for all the love, everybody. Much appreciated. And like we say, going forward, I'll have Josh send me the name so we can try and get a little bit of better pronunciation going forward here. Josh brings the music knowledge. I'll bring the funny name pronunciation.
I'll just send you the names and you can.
We all have.
I'll just send you the names and you can read them. How about that?
You're right.
That's your new job.
Like I say, we all have our skill set. That's fine with me. You get to do all the intro. I'll take part in that. I figure it's time for me to start carrying my weight.
There you go. And like I said earlier, the Josta show over the week too. If you listen to the episode with Scott Ian Lewis from Carnifex, Josta shouted out the Talk To Me podcast. I'm going to play that right here just because I think it was awesome.
And actually, I got a little note here. Joshua Toomey does the Talk To Me podcast. Check it out for interviews with people from Jim Brewer to Glenn Benton, also Frank Three Gun and Chris Beattie from Hatebreed in the archives. So thank you to Talk To Me podcast.
And yeah, that was cool, man. It was kind of sketchy. It was like some free advertising. You know, it cost a couple of bucks to donate towards the cause, but you know, it didn't cost much. And cool to just have him shout out the podcast. And I had, you know, I could tell like after that episode came out, there were a few more extra Facebook likes that kind of came out of nowhere. So I think it did its job.
No need to apologize for going for some, you know, some big advertising like that. He reaches a ton of people. So, you know, as we were just saying, you know, trying to get the name out there, get some more listeners and some more exposure. If you could do that, you know, with a guy like that with his podcast, you got to take advantage. So good idea on that.
Yeah. And on to the guest of honor this week. That was Matt Hafey of Trivium. They have the great new album, The Sin and the Sentence. If you're listening on post day, it comes out tomorrow. That's October 20th. Make sure you're hitting that up on your Spotify, on your Apple Music, or buying a physical copy. And the reason I say listen on Spotify and Apple Music is because we actually talking to Matt talked a lot about Spotify and how much he loves streaming services and things like that. And that's, you know, not a whole lot of people right now are talking about, you know, loving Spotify. Most people are still trying to hawk a CD to you.
For me, I'm kind of torn because I know that with my favorite bands, I always buy a copy. I mean, I'll download them because admittedly, like I have some friends, you know, in the music industry that hook me up when they come out early. But any of my favorite bands, I always buy what they're selling, because I've always had the opinion that if I stop paying money for what they're doing, they're going to lose the ability to do that eventually. So I won't get any more music. So, but by the same token, I do use streaming services because especially playing in a cover band, when you have to learn a whole bunch of individual songs by artists that you really don't like, you don't want to go buy an entire album. So for me to do, like, I use Amazon Unlimited, for example. It's like $7.99 a month. So I'll just go in there and download a single song rather than having to purchase it or, you know, purchase the full album. So I'm so on the fence because I'm a user, but not really a believer in streaming services. I'm kind of against what it does to the value of music overall, I think.
Yeah, that's the one thing. I mean, I remember being a kid and, you know, you would get a metal magazine, a Metal Edge, Circus, Hit Parade or something, and you would see a photo, you would read a good article about a band, but you still didn't know what they sounded like. You might get a you know, this band is the greatest mashup of Metallica and the Melvins, you know, since blah, blah, blah. You would spark your interest. So you would have to wait until you went to the record store, or you went to the, you know, even a used record store or whatnot. And, you know, and then you bought the album and then you got it out to your car. And then that's when you first listened to it. Now it's like, hey, John, you know, do you like the new blah, blah, blah? Man, I haven't heard it. Give me 1 second. You know, boop, it's on your phone and you're checking it out like immediately. So the buildup's not there for a lot of things. I think it's, I think the buildup to me was a lot of the, I remember buying Chaos AD. I hadn't really gotten into Sepultura yet, but I was really excited to hear this band Sepultura. And I finally found a copy of Chaos AD on cassette at the used record store. And it was a hunt. There was a hunt to it. It wasn't just handed to me. So I think actually putting in work and effort to get some music, you know, made it that much more special.
I think, and that goes along with my, you know, my comment on the value of music in general, because, you know, when I was a kid, there was a CD store that was about a 20 to 30 minute bike ride from my place. And, you know, when I knew something was coming out, I would ride my bike, and you got that half hour to just sit there and stew over the fact, like, man, you know, in 20 minutes, I'm going to have the new Van Halen record or something, you know. And even going back and finding older bands, like when I really got into Metallica, you know, I would go, you know, this was right about when CDs started coming out, and I'd go buy CD copies of Kill 'Em All and Ride the Lightning. And it was an event, like you said. It was more of an event to go get the record and kind of have to research it and everything. Now with everything right at your fingertips immediately, it's just not quite as cool. And I know a lot of people have that opinion that are, you know, a little bit older that had to go through that stuff, but it really is something that, you know, brought a lot of heart to the music industry that is kind of missing these days. And I think that's because it's just so readily available.
Yeah, but I also think that, you know, you have to change with the times too, because I'm assuming that, you know, when cassettes first came out, people were like, oh, but you still got to buy the vinyl. And then, you know, CDs come out and they're like, oh, but you know, you still need to buy the cassette or something. And, you know, it's always the next thing that people don't like change, and they want to push all that stuff away. And I think that, you know, streaming services like a Spotify, you know, like an Apple Music, or even what, you know, your Amazon thing you were talking about, like all of those have their merits. And I think eventually the formula will be worked out between, you know, said record label and, you know, the record label, the artist, and the streaming services, where, you know, somebody's getting paid. Not a lot of the bands are getting paid right now. So I think once they get that all worked out, I think it's going to be good for everybody. I don't think we can, you know, hold on to the dinosaur that the CD will eventually become.
Yeah. Now, and I agree with that. And I'm totally on the fence because, as I said, I still go and buy physical copies of stuff like Seven Dust and Dream Theater and Anthrax, and, you know, because I just feel like that's, you know, keeping what they're doing alive. I can get more new music because of that. But I do also use the streaming stuff a lot. I mean, that Amazon Unlimited has pretty much everything. And, you know, you and I talked about it, but the, you know, the remastered versions of Kill 'Em All and Ride the Lightning, for example, they're like 11 CDs between the two of those. And if you buy the full versions of those things, you're talking about like probably close to $100, $120, $130 for 11 hard discs, as opposed to I just, you know, downloaded all 11 for basically nothing.
Yeah,
in about 30 seconds.
It's, you know, so, with the Metallica box, you know, set coming up, what did we say it was? Like $150, $160 bucks. And but for the amount of stuff that you get is amazing. But if it's on Spotify the same day it's released on box set form, I'm probably going to be like, all right, you know, it's already on my phone. I can just listen to it right now if I want to. You know, you almost buy the box set for the novelty of owning the physical product. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's the convenience of the phone. I mean, I've said this before, and I think that I honestly don't know if we have a CD player in the house. So it's, you know, I have Bluetooth everything. My phone's Bluetooth to this. My laptop, I can Bluetooth to my, you know, my Bluetooth speaker. It's getting to the point to where even the CD player itself is becoming irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean, I got to think if I have one. In the house, I don't think so. I would have to use my PS3 or my PS4. And other than that, I just bought a new car a couple weeks ago, and that's all Bluetooth. I mean, it does have a CD player, but I didn't know it had one until a week into it. I happened to look. I'm like, it's right at the top of the, you know, the radio part, and there's just a little slot. And I was like, what the hell is that? And I saw the eject button. It doesn't have the CD logo on it, anything. It's just kind of like, oh, yeah.
If you ever need to use this whole thing. So,
even in the new cars, if they have it, they're trying to make it look like you don't.
But yeah, man, make sure to go and get the new Trivium CD or stream it or however you get it. Just make sure you don't illegally download it. Make sure you're at least using a proper site to get it. The Sin and the Sentence out tomorrow, out at 10 out October 20th on Roadrunner Records. And let's jump into our cover of the week, and then we will talk to Matt Hafey of Trivium. So for the Talk To Me cover of the week, brought to you by Pukhaki, that's PUCKHCKY.com. Make sure to head over there, get yourself some Tom Hazard stuff, David Ellefson, Doyle, 36 Crazy Fists, Snoop Dogg, Testament, Exodus, Darkest Hour, so many great bands, and so many other they have great just graphic tees and stuff over there too. So shop till you drop. So yeah, use the promo code TALK for 10% off your entire order. Yes, that is TALK as in Talk To Me for 10% off your entire order. So for the Talk To Me cover of the week this week, we're going to do Trivium doing the great Master of Puppets.
Thank you.
All right, guys, that was Master of Puppets, as done by Trivium, and we have the Master of Puppets himself, Matt Hafey, on the line, and I got your last name right. I know I did practice that for a year now. Matt Hafey of Trivium. How you doing, man?
Yeah, very good. How are you?
I am doing well, and like I said, we just came out of Master of Puppets, your version of Master of Puppets. What do you remember about recording that version of Master of Puppets?
Man, that was quick. That was right when, I guess, we had the buzz of Ascendancy going on in the UK, and one of their biggest magazines was doing a tribute to Master of Puppets because it was like the 20-year anniversary, and they were going around asking all the bands. Luckily, they asked us. I think we were one of the first bands, if not the first band they asked. It was at Master of Puppets right away. Like, if we're doing that record, it has to be that song for us. And I was just asked to write a piece on the song Master of Puppets a couple of days ago, so I kind of have this ready. But I feel like that song summarizes everything that's great about Metallica, everything from past, present, and future that Metallica is in one song. Having that clean section in like the three-quarter length of the song, and then having like the downpicked verses, the super catchy chorus, guitar solos, dual solos, all that stuff. So we're really happy to do that one. It was so fast. I don't even really remember doing it in the studio, but I do remember us doing some festival shows with Metallica afterwards, and Lars particularly mentioning that he felt our cover was a great version of their song. So that was awesome. I do remember that.
Wow, that's a great, great accolades to get from Lars. You know, that was kind of coming around the time too that, you know, you guys were being very heavily saying you're the next Metallica, stuff like that. Were you kind of worried about doing a Metallica cover at that point, or were you just excited to do it?
No, man. No, we were 18. We felt like we're on top of the world. We just got our first gold record and first couple magazine covers. And, you know, our goal ever since I was like 13 years old was to be the kind of band that could play arenas and stadiums. And, you know, that's what I wanted when I was 13. And as I've grown older, you know, it's kind of melded and shifted into its own thing. And I still would love our band to be the kind of band that can make a significant dent in music history, in the music world. If it doesn't happen the exact way that I envisioned it when I was 13, I mean, at least we were able to do this for a living. And it's pretty amazing that we get to play music and this is all I've ever done. It's the first band, first job. But I know that that was pretty jarring when we came out saying all that stuff, but I'm glad we did. I really am glad we did. And I don't find that it was like an arrogant thing. I found it was a confident thing. And the reason why we had the confidence, by the time we were 18, 19, saying that we wanted to be the next biggest metal band in the world, we had all already been in bands since we were like 13 years old. And I know a lot of other people are like, well, you guys were 13 years old, but we were practicing our asses off as if we were a professional band. And we've always had that attitude ever since. And I think that's why we're confident in what we do. And I think there's nothing wrong with people saying their goals. I mean, look at Conor McGregor. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves Conor McGregor because he comes out saying, I'm going to do this. I'm going to fight for the top. And even though he lost in the fight with Mayweather, that's still a win for him. He still made MMA bigger than it's ever been. So there's nothing wrong with people shouting their goals from the rooftops. It's just, if you're going to do that, you better have the substance to back it.
Yeah, I think there's also something that kind of manifests from that too. Like, by coming out and saying that you're going to be the next best thing, I think you kind of get it ingrained in people's minds, and maybe they check you out with that intention in their mind. They're like, maybe this might be the next best thing. Let's see what it does, kind of thing, rather than, you know, just coming out and saying like, you know, will you please listen to our album? You know,
exactly.
I think people exactly. People love confidence, like a Conor McGregor.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, other bands didn't love it. We did have a hard time finding tours because all other bands that were bigger thought we were dicks. So we did have a hard time getting support gigs. But eventually people started realizing that we're just normal dudes. It's just that we have a really high goal. And everything I do in life, I train to be the best at it, knowing that I'm not going to be the best at it. Like, I know I'll never be as good of a singer as Bruce Dickinson, Ronnie James Dio, and Freddie Mercury, but I train every day to get that good, knowing it'll never happen. And that's the same thing I like to do in everything. When I do jiu-jitsu, I train to be the best, even though there's no way in hell I'll ever be the best jiu-jitsu practitioner. But if you train with that absolute highest level, I mean, that's how you get good at something.
So you kind of you talked about a little bit about that, about being the biggest metal band or attempting to be the biggest metal band. And you guys are always on the festivals, always very high up on the festivals. Do you think there's a next step in your career where you're actually going to be the festival headliner? You're going to be the next, once the bands like, you know, Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, you know, even Metallica, once they start to retire, those places will be open. Is Trivium kind of eyeballing that spot?
I mean, it's hard to predict that kind of thing. That'd be amazing. if it happens, killer. And I think that we will be the kind of band that can live up to that, because we put everything that we are into this band. I mean, off tour, on tour, we're all obsessive compulsive practitioners of what, of our instruments, and even as a band. And we like to go into things overprepared. And I think that's why our shows are good. So we're up for the challenge. I hope it happens. If it doesn't happen, I'm not going to beat myself up, but I hope it does.
Nice. And you, we'll just jump to one thing real quick, and then we'll get back into music. But you you recently posted a bunch of pictures of you and Hurricane Irma and getting prepared for it. Did you come out of that unscathed? Was your house okay?
Thankfully, we were fine. A lot of people didn't fare as well in some of the more coastal towns, but with the way the storm shifted, we were definitely lucky. I mean, we did like a 4-week European tour, and I had a week long press tour in Europe, and we were following Hurricane Harvey the whole time. And what I said was, when I get home, I want to prepare for Irma as if it's going to be as bad as Harvey. I mean, Harvey's still going to be years of damage for Houston, unfortunately, to clean up and fix up. And that's what I came home and got ready for it to be that bad. And it thankfully wasn't that bad. And I think that kind of ties in with the previous answer or a couple questions ago, where I was talking about how everything I do in life, I train to be the best at it. Everything I like or everything I do in life, I go to the absolute extreme. Like when I decided I want to get into martial arts, I looked up what I felt like would be the most difficult. And I thought that'd be Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So I went to Jiu-Jitsu. And then as I started progressing in Jiu-Jitsu, I started gravitating towards what would be the most intense or brutal or extreme joint locks or submissions, and then heel hooks. So I went into that. When I got into metal, I first got into Metallica, and then I wanted to dig to heavier stuff, and it was Pantera and Slayer, and then it was melodic death metal, and then it was black metal. So I always liked things that I like to go very intensely into. And I didn't like preparing for the hurricane, but I wanted to be really ready. So it was about boarding the windows. I had to drive 2 hours away to another town to get a generator, because Lowe's.com guaranteed us a generator and then canceled the order without saying anything. I had to find gas containers and fill those up, and propane tanks. And I feel like, thankfully, with the prep, we could have survived for like maybe a week or two without power. But we lucked out, and my in-laws had power at their house. So we toughed it for a couple of days and then headed over there. So I sold out, but at least I knew I was ready.
Yeah, you got to go where the power is, you know, if it's in the family. So that's always nice. And let's get it back around to The Sin and the Sentence, out October 20th. This will drop on the 19th, so out tomorrow. Great new album out on Roadrunner Records. And we'll just jump on that real quick. From what I can tell, you seem to be a very loyal person, and the people that have been around you since you were 18 and signed to Roadrunner kind of seem like the same core group of people. I mean, you know, Amy, who's at Adam Splitter now, you know, has been working with you since then. You know, you've been on Roadrunner this entire time. Is that something that you, you know, you enjoy? You enjoy having that kind of family built in around you for this many years?
Absolutely. I love going in everything as a team. You know, when we first signed, we'd meet some bands. They kind of looked at, I'm not talking about anyone on Roadrunner or anything, but like bands that always give that impression that the label's the enemy, and like the press is the enemy, and everyone's out to get you, and it's all about you, and it's just about yourself and trying to fight for everything that you want, a very like self-contained, selfish thing. For us, we always like everything to be a team. When we go on the road with our road crew, we always tell them, no one works for anyone here. We're all doing this together. And that's the same thing we tell the label when we're with the label. It's like, we're all doing this as a team. We have the same goal. So everything's a teamwork. Everything's a team effort. Our band as well. Our band is a team effort. It's run by everyone in the band. So we like to do that. And Roadrunner has always been great to us. And they signed us when I was 17, 18 years old. I've known Amy since then. The team has shifted a little bit here and there, but we still have a lot of people we've been working with since I was a kid, which is really amazing. So we love to, when something's working, why change it? And that's another constant. You know, with Trivium, I'm sure it'll come up maybe next question or a couple questions from now about drummers. But for us, the one constant you can always see is that Tori, Paulo, and myself have been the constant. And once something works, we stick with that.
Well, let's jump into the drummer question.
you got it.
I've been watching the making of this album videos, and just from what I can tell, reading online, I mean, you guys seem to be extremely excited to have Alex Bent in the band, formerly of Battlecross, also filled in for Gene Hoglan in his Testament time, which is, you know, if you can fill in for Gene Hoglan, I'm pretty sure you can play with anyone. But but you know, getting him in the band, I mean, how has it been? You know, all the accolades there.
That's been the nice thing. It's when people hear this new material and they hear Alex, they don't ask us why Alex Bent. They know right away. They're like, oh, this is what you've been looking for. As far as drummers, we've had 4 studio drummers now, including Alex. So it's not as many as some other bands have had. Yes, it's very Spinal Tap. No, we don't like to change drummers, but we've always had to. Every time we've done it, it's been for the necessity of the band's survival. I know that sounds intense and fans might not quite get that because they'll think that, oh, I've seen a good show with this guy or this guy. But it's not just about shows. It's not just about doing well at a show or two or doing well on one tour. It's about a life commitment. And it's about putting everything you are into this band on and off tour, on record, live shows. And we've had drummers who are incredible, have done amazing, amazing things. We love all the moments we've had with all of them that played with us. But Alex is the fit we've been looking for, a guy who is obsessed with practice, who is obsessed with his craft, who's constantly working to be better. And that's something that we all share in this band and we all have in this band. I think you kind of have to be that way. Paulo said it best in one of the doc episodes. He was saying that if other bands or other musicians maybe did the level of practice that we like to do, it might not be fun. And I'm not saying that every band should be practicing as much as we do. It's just the way that it works for us. Not every singer needs to do what I do. Not every singer needs to do the vocal regimen that I do Monday through Friday when I'm home 2 to 4 hours a day of singing and screaming. Some guys don't need to do that. Bruce Dickinson doesn't need to do that. Ronnie James Dio didn't need to do that. I remember always hearing Howard Jones didn't need to warm up very much. He's one of the best singer screamers of modern times. And it's something I do need to do. If I don't warm up and train that much, it's not going to sound good. And I know that about my instrument. And so we know that about our band. We know that we have to be over-prepared for everything. And with a guy like Alex, he's always been looking for the right home too. You mentioned 2 of the bands he's played with, but he's played with like 15 to 20 bands.
Right.
Everyone from like Decrepit Birth to Rings of Saturn to doing like Latin fusion stuff, like gospel drums to cover bands and everything in between. So he's been looking for the right home too, as have we. And pending no insanity, like Alex trying to decapitate me or light the bus on fire or anything like that, we're going to be fine. So fingers crossed, but everything seems great. He seems like the kind of guy that we are. We're just normal guys that play metal, and we love metal, and we love to take our instrument to the next level.
You talked about how much you guys practice, and back in the late 90s, I had a pretty semi-popular band or whatever where I was from, and we got to open for a national band coming through. And I remember talking to their singer. It was one of my favorite bands. They weren't huge, but they were one of my favorite bands. And I remember asking him, you know, how often they practiced. Because, you know, we practiced 4 nights a week, 3 hours a night. And, you know, it was like a regimented thing like you guys talk about with Trivium. And he looked at me and he was like, how often do we practice? What do you mean? He's like, we get together for like a week before tour, go over the set, and then we go on tour. Like, I was totally blown away and almost kind of like, saddened to hear that.
Mm-hmm. We still see that a lot too with like fans younger than us that are doing well that don't warm up. And some guys don't, like I said, some guys don't need to warm up. That's fine. But if it's showing in your live show and you're playing sloppy because you've got your preferences or your priorities somewhere else while you're on the road, that's not okay. The first thing a band needs to be great at when they're on tour is their show. If you're doing that great, then you're free to do whatever else you want as long as it's, you know, legal. Like if you don't need to warm up and you can crush it live every single night on a tour, then that's perfect. But for us, it's like we take it so seriously now. And when we were younger, yeah, 18 to 21, maybe we were a little dumber. We didn't like to warm up as much. Maybe we came off arrogant and cocky. Maybe we were. I mean, who wasn't at 18 years old? But it was like a moment. I guess it was Download 2005 or 2004, 2005, when we came out and played that 11 a.m. slot that's been like, it's been hailed as one of the most legendary performances in the UK. When we came up there, I was still hungover. I didn't warm up. I was nervous. I was like, man, I'm going to sound like shit. But for some reason, everything went okay. And everything, well, I guess everything went great because then our band kind of skyrocketed in the UK and started cracking a little bit in the rest of the world. And after that show, I said to myself, I cannot do this anymore. I cannot be unprofessional because I don't want to feel this nervousness. Can this happen? Am I going to pull this off? And that's when we started taking a lot more seriously. And I guess even with vocals, with that vocal blowout I had in 2014 on the Vengeance Falls cycle and having to rebuild my voice, that's another reason why I practice so much off tour. If I can sing 5 days in a row, 2 to 4 hours a day, singing and screaming, full voice, with no issue while being at home, while still training jujitsu and, you know, training hard and allowing chokes and getting choked out, hopefully not too much in class, and still be able to sing afterwards, then when I go on tour and I'm singing 30 to 120 minutes, it should be easy. And I'm taking care of it and I'm taking less risk, and then it should be easier. So I like to make things much harder when I practice them. So that way it's muscle memory when I go on tour and I don't have to think about it. I don't have to worry. Am I going to hit these notes? Is my screaming going to work? It's just going to be reflex.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's too much of a stigma around, you know, the guy stayed up all night partying and he walked out on stage drunk and then put on a great performance and then went right back to the Jack Daniels. I mean, there's so many of those stories out there that are legendary that that you almost feel like, well, but if I'm going to be a rock star, I have to do it this way. And you know, that's not always the case.
Before the days of cell phone cameras, because that makes me wonder how good people's memories are for these things. Because a lot of times our memory, we glorify things that were of the past that we can't really have hand proof of it. And I think that nowadays, when you can see that, if people can take video and video makes things sound way worse as it is as well. So I wonder sometimes if all the 60s through the mid to late 90s were as good as we all remember them.
they were. But all right, with cell phone cameras and things like that, are you worried about playing new songs prior to the album being out and letting those versions kind of be the first versions people hear?
That's why we had Sin come out right before we left for Europe. Actually, it might have came out right when we landed in Europe because we wanted to play it for the first show. So we do, with this album, we obviously scheduled everything to a T. We finished the whole thing and created the videos and all the content for everything before even letting anyone know we had anything. And then we had that very calculated, timed release for everything. And there's still stuff timing out. I mean, right now, another like behind the scenes kind of stuff. Apollo and I talked about the song meetings is starting to come out on all our socials today. So that needs careful planning because we have done that. We have done it where a live version was the first thing. And it's not that it's the quality thing. It's that we want people to know what we're playing. So with most records, we've had it come out first. Like I remember we had Kitty Stegelman come out before Shogun came out. So that when we went to Japan, people knew the song. I think that was like the first time we played it over there, something like that. So we like to have where people can at least sing along a little bit.
Are you a videos kind of guy? Do you like doing music videos?
I do. But my favorite kind of do is the more the story based. That's because of Rammstein. I'm a big Rammstein fan. I've always loved their videos. How their videos are mini movies. Performance videos, I mean, kind of give or take. But I have realized as well that our movie based videos are not as popular as our performance based videos. So we know what our audience wants and we know it works well with metal. So it's now about trying to make the performance videos interesting. So with like Heart From Your Hate, I thought those were really cool, extremely minimal performance video. We've never had a performance video that minimal before, but just the lighting and the aspects of it. And actually that sideways dolly cam look where it's going back and forth left and right. And it looks like we're superimposed on top of each other. We're actually not, we're actually all playing in a weird staggered position. And it's so cool that it looks fake. And I like that. I like that it's something different. So just happy actors like that. I do like shooting videos. I do like being really involved with the visual art process of the record. My best friend, John Paul Douglas, has done most of the art again for this record. And it was a happy accident that we were having my wife do the layout again, but she's done the layout for Ab Initio, Silence in the Snow, Vengeance Falls. So she started doing the layout and she started making symbols for every song. And as soon as we saw those symbols, that became the record cover and became the main focus of the visual. So it's great to be able to work with friends and family in this band as well.
Are you one that wants to create not only music, but a visual along with everything? Do you see every aspect of the band like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. We find that everything is as important as everything. Our merch is as important as our backdrops, is as important as our music, and our lyrics are as important, if not more important, than the music. And because that's the first thing people hear, that's the thing that musicians understand first. So we want everything to be at the highest level possible. And ever since the beginning, we've been relatively hands-on with things, but I feel like our visuals is something we didn't have figured out till In Waves. And In Waves, I feel like we've truly figured out what a Trivium music video is, what a Trivium record cover is, what a Trivium layout is. And we've been going with that formula since. And the formula is different record to record, but at least being very involved with everything. Like, we do pick exactly what artists do our t-shirts and what kind of inspirations to give them. Because we're all fans of music first. So I remember back to being really excited when I see bands' record covers or reading their lyrics or seeing their t-shirts. And I want everything to be a great experience of every step of the way for the band.
Well, yeah, I mean, the art of the album cover is kind of lost in the MP3 downloads just for your phone, just because, you know, you and I assume are the same, where, you know, you'd go to the record store flipping through the bin and you would buy something off of an album cover. And, you know, if it was good or bad, you never know. But, you know, you didn't know until you got home.
Yeah, and I've actually still done that recently. I remember the first time I ever did that was Death Sound of Perseverance. But I did that a couple years ago. It was 2014 at Hellfest. I was in the metal market at Hellfest, and I don't know if you've been in European festivals. European festivals are so amazing. It's like, for a metalhead, it's the greatest thing in the world. Cause it's not just about the shows, but they also have these areas where it's like a store that's set up of all merch. So they'll have all the bands there, like the band's merch, but also it goes into further. So they'll have like extreme metal record labels that are out there. We're selling like vinyl, t-shirts, vintage shirts, CDs, patches, stickers, everything. And I saw this piece of artwork as I was walking by in the metal market. And I was like, what the hell is that? It's a band called Brigard Les Hommes Tumber. I saw this epic, biblical-looking, evil t-shirt and record, not even knowing what they sounded like. I bought their record, CD, the patches, the stickers, and their shirt. And I started wearing it, and I listened to everything. Thankfully, it was an incredible band. And I've been wearing their stuff and rocking their stuff ever since. So that still happens to this day. I guess with me, because I am so pro streaming, like, I love Spotify. It's what I use. But what I like to do is I like to buy the band that I love's record. So I buy their vinyl and I stream them. So that way they're consistently getting streams and I can listen to the vinyl when I'm at home.
Are you a person that's, you know, you're moving forward in the music business where you understand that streaming and Apple Music and things like that are going to be the future, and that the fight to sell physical copies is probably going to be one that everyone's going to lose?
Absolutely. And what really sucks about other bands is they're perpetuating the falsification that streaming doesn't pay. It does pay. Ask your record labels. It is in the, and if it's not in your contract, you need to rework your contract. But streaming is the same as radio play. It's not going to be one stream equals one sale of a song, but it's cumulative. So if there are several thousand plays of one song, that equals sales. But what's good is that streaming is endless. People are always streaming things like Netflix, like Hulu. Mm-hmm. And these things, as they keep streaming, they can keep generating revenue versus being a one-time thing. Versus just being one CD sale. I think what happened with the CD industry is that people started pushing, well, bands don't make money off CDs anyway. And if millions of people are saying that and perpetuating that, people stop buying CDs because they hear that it stops, that it doesn't make money. So I think anytime that happens, I always like to tell our fans, no, it's a good thing. You know, this is the way it's going. Interestingly enough, I think 50% of our stuff in the US is still physical, which is pretty surprising. I think Germany is one of the territories that's very highly physical stuff, but a place like Sweden, Norway, it's 99% streaming. And then like 90% of that is Spotify alone, which is crazy. And then Germany, I think it's like 75-80% physical CD market still. In Japan as well, very still physical market. America's 50-50 for us. I'm not talking about all bands across the board, but for us.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Yeah. And it's important to always move with the evolving times. I think evolutions of things are very exciting. Sometimes it misses the mark and it's not great, but sometimes things are great. Like, I love video games. I just learned about Twitch streaming maybe 6 months ago, and I've been Twitch streaming for like 4 or 5 months, and it's been a whole another outlet that I'm able to have with our fans, and been growing followers. I got a cool endorsement from Asus, the computer company. They gave me a gaming rig, and like, you know, like I said, the reason why I was like a couple minutes late for our phone call, even, because I was doing a giveaway where I was able to give away this like amazing microphone to people that were able to enter into a contest on my channel. So it's fun stuff, and it's not for every band. I'm not saying every band needs to do these things they don't like, but I naturally liked video games, so it's like it was the right progression, and it's cool. It's another thing that people can go straight to me, and not just Twitter and Instagram, but they can actually hang out and chat and watch me play video games.
Right.
I enjoy that stuff.
If I'm not mistaken, and I'm not familiar with Twitch, I'm not a huge gamer. I believe I understand the premise is, you can make donations or you can make money from Twitch, correct?
Yeah, and there are a couple ways. It's through donations, but it's also through subscriptions. So people are able to subscribe for $5, $10, or $25 a month. And if they have an Amazon Prime, they can free subscriptions, like one free one per month. But yes, so Twitch has deals that way that you make a commission based on your submission or subscription. I mean, I'm small potatoes on it. I'm not making any career money off it by any means, but it's like, you know, it's food money. Like,
right.
If I want to go out to eat, I can, you know, Twitch helps me pay for that kind of stuff. But there are people that are career Twitch streamers that are streaming 5 to 7 days a week, 5 to 10 to 12 hours a day. And I heard some of the top Twitch streamers in the world are making like 6 figures a year, but that's like professional playing nonstop. I only can play like today. I played for 30 minutes and that's nothing compared to the guys that are playing 8 to 12 hours a day, but it's great. I like to see that there are these new frontiers of jobs. Cause I remember when I was a kid, people told me, oh, you'll never be able to be in a band professionally. And I'm sure you had the same thing or people telling you like, oh, you can't talk to bands for a living. That's crazy. You guys have to get normal jobs. And then now we've got things like esports, where people can be on competitive gaming teams, because that's the other route you can go with video games, where it's like the NFL. So there are players and there are owners of the teams, or you could be a Twitch streamer or a YouTuber or in a band or a podcast person. Or I love it. I think that it's great that there are all these other opportunities and these new things that are growing and these new careers and aspects. And yeah, stuff's going to go up and down. There are going to be good things and bad things, but that's for time to, you know, to weed it out.
Right. And I'll ask you this because of the analytical mind that you have, but my wife and I were watching my youngest son, who's about to be 3, is he's watching YouTube videos of this
Minecraft.
He's watching this he actually watches Real People shows. It's kind of odd. My other two kids liked cartoons until they were 5 or 6. This one's already into live action stuff, but it's a guy and a boy and they run around chasing dinosaurs, and it's kind of cheaply made. It doesn't look terrible. Maybe the dad has a decent, you know, Mac setup at home or something. But I was looking at the views of this thing, and you know, and I keep laughing at it. I'm like, this one has like 38 million views, and this one has, you know, this how many? I'm like, I looked at it, and I'm like, how many views of a YouTube video does it take for you to be famous? And I'm talking about if these two guys or the guy and the kid showed up at the mall, would there be a line out the door to meet them? You know, like when does fame, where does fame cross over and all that? And I was trying to figure that out with her.
At one of our shows in Barcelona, this is kind of the reason why I started going into streaming and doing YouTube stuff as well. We were playing Barcelona. After the show, the promoter's like, oh, there's a couple YouTubers that want to grab some pictures with you. So we're like, oh, that's interesting. So we look these guys up. Mind you, Trivium is at like maybe 300,000 YouTube subscribers, 300,000. Mm-hmm. I look these dudes up. The main guy named Jordy Wild, he's got 6.7 million subscribers. 6.7 million. His buddy has 500,000. His other buddy's got 400,000. His other guy's got like another 600,000. And so we met these guys. I ended up befriending all of them as well. I've since been on Jordy's show. But man, yeah. So that's another idea of the new frontier. And he did like a South American YouTubers convention. I think he was the headlining dude that showed up. There's something like 20,000 people there.
Wow.
So it's big. Like some of these guys are really big, but it's, I don't know. I think it's up in the air. Some are going to be the ones that are pretty superstar people. Some it's like just a very specific niche of what they do. I've been able to meet some really interesting, cool YouTubers that do different things. It's cool. It's crazy how different the world has shifted. And even just learning about how big esports is. I mean, esports leagues and esports games or matches, they'll sell out arenas.
Yeah, I've watched you watch them do like Madden tournaments and stuff like that, and you're, and it's looks like a, you know, you how a football game would really look, you know, tons of people having a good time in their jerseys, you know, having a beer and rooting on these guys playing Madden, and it's stuff that, you know, we did growing up, you know, having Madden parties at the house and stuff like that. So yeah, it's crazy how everything evolves.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm really excited to see where things can go. And like I said, there will always be a couple things that hit the mark and a couple things that fall short, but it's really cool. And it's been interesting to be able to bridge the gap. Like I was like one of my good friends works at Blizzard, and when we were doing the record, I realized that I was 5 minutes from Blizzard's headquarters. So I was able to go to Blizzard and like do a tour and see how they make stuff over there. So it's cool that something that I love so much, like music, has been able to get me to be able to see other things I love. Like I love games and food and martial arts, and it's cool that these worlds can kind of intertwine and intersect. And I think that's what makes life so interesting, when we can have all these different things intertwining.
Yeah, it's a crazy world out there. And yeah, my 12-year-old son, yes, he does sit there and watch other kids playing Minecraft all day. So yeah, I see it all around the house, and I'm like, it boggles my mind that kids watch other kids playing video games, and I guess adults watch other adults play video games in your case too. So crazy.
Yep, I do. Yeah. It's crazy. Like if you look up, I think one of the top Twitch streamers in the world is Lyric, LIRIK. And to back up a little bit, so I've got about 13,000 Twitch followers. Demetrius Johnson, the flyweight champion of the UFC, has 100,000. Lyric has 2.5 million followers on Twitch. It's crazy. So he's like the AC/DC of Twitch, which is cool. I'm happy to see that other things are progressing in life. Like I remember other kids at school's parents telling me, like, yeah, your band will never go anywhere. You'll never be able to do this. You know, you're going to find a real job, or never my family or anything, but like there are other relatives of other families who be like, oh, well, what are you going to do after the band? Or what's the real job you're going to do after this? I'm like, this is it. This is what I'm doing. I love this.
Well, I know I don't have you for too much longer, so I want to jump back to a couple of things on the album. You're talking about your scream, and your scream is quote unquote back. You know, you laid down all of the clean singing, some of the scratchy singing and stuff like that, but you waited till the end to scream. And from what I could tell, yep, you know, you're screaming like you were, you know, pre the voice blowout. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yep. Yeah. So it's something that I swore I would never do again. Like when I blew my voice out in 2014 and I rebuilt the singing, learned a new technique for the screaming, I said, I swear I will never do this old technique again that put me out of commission. And we did, what's really cool is we did the whole record. Like I did all the main vocals and the harmonies. So when we start up a song, I would do all the main vocals first, and I would do all the harmonies for that song. We finished up the whole record like that. And our producer, Josh, said, Matt, I hate to tell you this, but you got better on the last couple of songs. So I'd like to go through everything, I guess. So we kept all the backup vocals, but we deleted all the mains, and I did the entire record a second time. After I finished the record a second time, he's like, dude, it happened again. Let's do this again. So we did the record a third time, the whole freaking thing. And once that was done, I said, Josh, are we sure that we have everything down? Let's do the screaming. And I was convinced by him because he's been a Trivium fan since the beginning. He saw us play CBGBs in 2004. And he's like, man, you have the scream. Because the one thing that I was always confident in, or two things I was always confident in with the early days of Trivium, is I always said that I was a great rhythm guitar player and a great screamer, but I was never really comfortable in my shoes as a singer until recently, really. And we got to do it. So I was trying to, because live is one thing, and that's something that I think I'd like to kind of educate fans on, is that live performance is about sustainability, because you have to do 3 to 6 to 7 shows in a row, then a day off, and then 3 to 6 to 7 shows in a row, and then a day off. And that's the way it's going to be for months at a time, weeks at a time. And you have to find a technique and a way that you could do that every day, and then you can pull that off every day, and it's never been an issue. When it comes down to the record, that's like the most final time you'll ever do that song. So you have to give it all. You have to give it your all. You have to go for broke. Josh taught me this. You have to throw technique out the window a lot of times with the recording, because you have to capture the energy. But if you apply album singing technique to a live show, a singer will probably lose his voice within a couple of shows. It's just not sustainable. Maybe there are a couple guys that can do it. I can't. I've tried it. It doesn't work for me. So with the record, we tried the live screaming technique. He's like, this isn't going to work. I need the old thing. I said, all right, I'll give you one day. So we did it was like between 6 and 8 hours, 1 6-to-8-hour day of screaming. So we did all the screaming, the entire record in that 6 to 8 hour chunk. And what's interesting is I was pretty sure that I would lose my voice for like a couple weeks. Like that in my head, I was like, yeah, I'm going to give myself a week or two. It'll be hoarse. It recovered in like 2 days or so. I think all the training I've been doing has definitely helped my voice. It's definitely prepared my voice for anything rougher. And that documentary part three shows when my voice is doing that weird like vibrato sound because my body was like protecting itself. And I just wanted to make the record right. So I gave it everything I had. And it is a totally different feeling. Like it's burns the throat. My stomach sticks way out because it's just so full of air. And came out sounding great. And luckily live, I'm able to recreate the sound, but just with a completely different technique. And it works live. It works when there's a massive PA and there's a sound guy following it along. It was a scary idea to do. I'm glad I did it. I'm really happy with the record. Sounds amazing. And it sounds like I mean it, which is something that it's always been difficult for me is to capture that live energy and intensity on a record. And I feel like this one captures it more so than ever, even though I was just talking about live technique versus studio technique, but I feel like this captured that raw live aggression feeling on a record for probably the best example that we've ever had.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously I've listened to the new album a few times getting ready for this. And, you know, it does harking back to the vocally, it harkens back to the early days of Trivium. But I think even new fans, old fans alike are going to love this album because I absolutely enjoyed it, man. It's been great.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man. Really appreciate that.
Cool. And we will end with The Sin and the Sentence. If you wanted the title track, if you want to give a little quick story about it, then I'll play us out of here.
Yeah, I guess I'll give a synopsis for the whole record because it's the record's named after the song.
Okay.
The idea with this record wasn't to recapture or to go back or to do anything like that. But what the idea with this record was to make the kind of music that we wanted to hear as fans of music and as fans of metal, that kind of music that we would want to hear if the three of us weren't in Trivium. So we went back to the mental headspace and to the preparation of where we were for some of our earliest favorite records. When we're looking at what we consider our favorite records, we said, what were the conditions in which we did these? And those were, we wrote the kind of music that we wanted to hear. We didn't think, are people going to like or dislike this? And it was us in the room together playing this stuff and fleshing the stuff out for weeks and days, weeks, months, whatever it may have been, before ever letting anyone else come in with it, touch it. So before ever working with a producer or showing this label or showing it to anybody, it was all about working it together, the four of us, making sure we loved it first and that it could come to life between the four of us before we brought anyone else in. And that's what we did with this record.
Well, guys, here we go with The Sin and the Sentence off of the aforementioned The Sin and the Sentence album, out October 20th, and tour with Arch Enemy starts on October 27th in Orlando, so check dates and times and check them out on tour. Thank you, Matt Hafey. Oh, I messed up. Thank you, Matt Hafey.
Almost did. No worries, man. Thank you very much. And if anyone's thinking about going to that tour, get your tickets in advance because a lot of it is selling out. So people need to get their tickets now.
All right. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you very much, man.
Bells calling out my name. I knew I'd never see another day. I couldn't swim against the tides of blame. I knew there was no other way. You better practice your lines. You better practice your words. All your devil monsters lie between the light and the shade. Feel. When honest men become
Hey, this is Matt Hapey from Trivium, and you're listening to Talk To Me on MetalNexus.net.
That was a Big Dumb Face, the side project of Wes Borland. That was the song called He Rides the Skies. And before that, we talked to Matt Hafey and heard the song The Sin in the Sentence, the title track off of the latest Trivium album. And once again, thank you to Matt Hafey for taking the time out and coming on Talk To Me, man. What a great guy.
Yep, that was a great interview, man. And they are a really cool band. It always blows my mind whenever I think of those guys that one of their claims to fame was how young they were when they got signed. Because it seems like they've been around for so long, but they're only, what, like their late 20s, early 30s?
Yeah, that's one thing, actually, if you go back in the archives, actually, like Matt and I talked about that the last time he was on, and he says he still gets kind of lumped into, you know, the old man band category, but yet, and Matt's like a year younger than the singer of A Day to Remember, but yet in your mind, A Day to Remember is a brand new band, and Trivium's like the old metal standby or something.
Yep. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And God, they came out, was it Bullet for My Valentine with like one of their first, with their first album when kind of Trivium was in that whole kind of wave?
Yeah, they were definitely in that same vein, like Trivium, Bullet for My Valentine. Yeah, they did seem to come out at the same time.
Yeah. And I mean, like I say, that was, God, 12 years ago or more? And it just, like you said, it seems like they're so much older, but you know, they were really young when they came out. And that was, I will never forget that being one of the selling points of that, the first record or two, is like these kids that are so much younger than everybody else, you know, that's signed and touring and stuff like that, are putting out this insanely good stuff. And you're like, God, how do kids that age do that? So that's always like my strongest memory of those guys. You know, the music's great, but I would always remember how everyone was blown away how young they were.
And after the Trivium song, you heard Big Dumb Face, which is Wes Borland's side project. And man, that song is fucking heavy as shit. A friend of the show, Eric Moore, messaged me the other day. He's like, have you heard the new Big Dumb Face song? And I was like, no. Like, why would I even go out of my way to hear that? And then he's like, dude, it's awesome. So I checked it out, and it's on MetalNexus.net, so make sure to head over to MetalNexus.net and check out the story along with that song. But yeah, it's off of Where is Duke Lion? He's Dead, set for release October 31st. Man, I've always been a huge Wes Borland fan, though. I you know, he added so much to Limp Bizkit, and I know people shit on Limp Bizkit all the time, but I mean, there was a good formula going there, and Fred and Wes had a kind of a, you know, they need each other.
Yeah. Well, I think that one album they did with Mike Smith kind of displayed that, because it was, you know, formulaically was pretty much the same, but it was definitely different. You could tell it was just, you know, Wes Borland's guitar playing has always been so unique, and the style of riffs that he comes up with, you know, they're accessible and they're heavy, but there's definitely something to those that are
very
different. And Mike Smith was just much more of a straight ahead kind of, you know, hardcore player.
Yeah. Mike Smith, I guess, was in Snot there for a minute, or was he in Snot or Head PE? I feel like he's in one of those bands before. Yeah. He was in Snot, and then he went on to,
cause he was with Sonny Mayo.
And then he went on to, I guess he, you know, because that was when they were doing those weird, like, you know, play guitar in Limp Bizkit, go to Guitar Center and audition, and it was a big hoopla to get that gig. I remember that. That was crazy.
Where Eddie Van Halen supposedly showed up.
Did he really? Is that like a rumor?
Yeah. It was back when he was really messed up. And apparently he showed up to play with Limp Bizkit. And he was whacked out of his brain. But the Limp Bizkit guys were just like, well, we have to do this because it's Eddie Van Halen. When Eddie Van Halen says, I want to jam with you, you don't say no. So they jam with Eddie Van Halen. He leaves. And I guess a little while later, he came back just throwing a total fit because he claimed he had left his guitar there or somebody had stole it or something. So he's throwing a fit because he couldn't find his guitar. But he was just whacked out of his brain. So it was like, what the hell? Eddie Van Halen jamming with Limp Bizkit? But like I said, it was during his severely coked up and drunk on wine days back in the early 2000s.
Yeah, I think that would have been fun, though. I think I'd have loved to have seen a Eddie Van Halen Limp Bizkit mashup.
How does that even work? I mean, my God.
I don't know, man.
The two styles just, I don't know how that would ever fit in any respect.
Fred was a very flamboyant front man, though, too. You know, he was kind of out there, so maybe he would have fit right in. We wouldn't even known.
Yeah, Eddie just goes all coked up and drunk to go jam with Limp Bizkit to join their band, and it ends up being Fred Durst become the new lead singer of Van Halen. Panama! Panama!
Oh, man. Well, speaking of Big Dumb Faces, the Titans play your Browns this weekend. And, you know, we don't normally talk a whole lot of football on this one, but this is the one week that our two teams play each other. So, you know, it's going to be a fun time up there in Cleveland. I should make the trip up, but I don't think I'm going to be able to make it.
I already offered you my tickets, man.
You offered me your tickets. I think we would have to go together. You could guard me in the dog pound.
Well, as long as you don't lip off, you're fine in the dog pound. That's what people don't understand. People are afraid of the dog pound because, oh, I've heard what happens down there. But people always leave out the part that stuff happens because the opposing fan is an asshole. And if you start picking on people in the most hardcore section of the stadium, you're going to get fucked with. It's pretty simple.
So we have to do a bet on this. We have to bet on this game.
No.
We have to do something.
No,
even
we don't.
If it's like, if you lose, you have to say, like, my name's John Drake and I like wieners. And, you know, like.
That's your first thought to bet? I like wieners.
You know, got to do something like that.
You could do better than that.
I Holy know. That's, shit. We're spitballing here. That's what happens when you're like, all right, well, that's not the perfect bet, but you know, there's got to be something. I mean, it's not going to be monetary. And
I already told you when we talked about this off the air, I cannot bet on my teams because I literally will lose everything. Because no matter what I bet, it will never, no matter what it is, I will lose, especially with the Browns. Not just because they're terrible, but I just, anytime I try to put my money or a bet where my mouth is with my teams, they lose. So I learned that years ago to not bet.
All right, fine. There's so, no bet on the Titans-Browns game. But if you guys are sports fans out there, make sure to hit us up on the Facebook, hit us up on the Twitter, and talk a little trash. Especially if our teams play
your
teams.
No talking trash. We suck.
Yeah, but the Titans
We're
have a
0-6.
The Titans have a way of playing down to their competition, and even on the I was listening to sports talk radio today, and people are like, "I'm worried about this." You know, like, you don't want to play an 0-6 team. You don't want to be the team that loses to them. And everybody's talking about like, yeah, the Browns sucked that 1 year too, but you know, we also were one of the two teams that Johnny Manziel beat in his NFL career. So it's,
I was at that game. It was awesome.
Yeah.
That was a fun game.
Yeah, that was...
That was a really fun game. But that's not going to happen again. We literally suck so goddamn bad. And I'm not doing this to try and, like, you know, trap you into thinking, oh, we might win so that you're more let down if you lose. I'm really saying that because we suck that goddamn bad. I mean, my wife and I own season tickets. We spent $1,300. We went to the first home game, left the half of the second home game, and probably won't go to another one.
You guys are fair weather. You're fair weather fans, man. You got to be there, win or lose, for your team.
You know what's funny about that, dude? I have been a fan for 31 years since I was 10 years old, and I've never missed a kickoff. And I'll watch them on TV, and I'll still support. But I'm getting tired of spending all this money when all they do is just shit the bed.
Yeah.
It's just a waste of money. So I'm like, look, you already got my $1,300. You don't need my concession money. You don't need my parking money. So fuck this. I'm going to save the money. I'll just grill steaks and drink beer at home.
All right, man. Well, let's wrap this one up. I got to say thank you, a huge thank you at the beginning of the show, too. The new intro that Chuck from the Metal Podcast put together for us, man.
Yeah.
He's that dude has the voice of God, and what a sweet sweet fellow that guy is. And yeah, he put that together for us. Even though he did it, you know, as a favor to me, I did kind of go back and forth with him a little bit on song selection and some editing, and I kind of felt bad because I kept sending it back. Like, I was like, can you do one more thing for me? Can you do this? You know, and it's a free thing. So I'm like, I kind of felt bad, but man, it came out so cool. And it's I love those guys. Hopefully get those guys on this show, and then maybe, you know, you and I can go on their show at some point too. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. No, that intro is fucking awesome. I mean, the other one he did was kick-ass, too. This one's even better.
Yeah,
you sent it to me, and I was like, holy shit, this is cool. So, yeah, thanks very much to Chuck, because that is phenomenal work. So, thanks very much, man.
Absolutely. And also, once again, just a huge thank you to Fist over there at Metal Nexus for having us on the inaugural episode of Talk To Me, the Metal Nexus podcast. It's coming together well. A lot of stuff going on, man, and this last week has been great. Also, if you want to leave a review on Facebook, I opened up reviews on Facebook. So we got a ton of, not a ton, but we have some Facebook reviews. I'll start reading those too if they start coming in. And I've just been getting some great messages on Twitter. And, you know, the love is coming from all different directions. And it's been great. And I just want to say thank you to everyone out there that pays attention to what we do here and supports what we do here.
Definitely. Same here, man. It's it seems to be growing a little bit each week. And that's really cool to see. So thanks for all the support. Thanks for the shares, the listens, the love, and everything. I know we both really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And we'll go ahead and throw it out there. Our episode for next week, we just finished the interview prior to doing the intros and outros for the Matt Tafey episode, but we just got off the phone with Rita Haney, you know, Dimebag's hag, Dimebag's old lady. And man, we talked for like an hour about Dimebag and Pantera and this new Dime Vision. And man, we honestly had to take a minute after the interview to just kind of collect ourselves from all the emotional talk. It gets pretty out there, man, and I cannot wait for you guys to hear it next week.
Yeah, it was definitely heavy in spots. I definitely want to. I can't wait for everyone to hear it because I think there's some really cool stuff that, you know, we discussed. And it was, for me, it was really cool to talk to her about Dime because I had a couple personal stories that, you know, it was nice to be able to tell her. And it was, man, it's just so cool when you do interviews like that that's mean something personally to you and then they turn out even better than you hope. So that's definitely one of them.
Yeah. So next week on the podcast, on Talk To Me, the Metal Nexus podcast, we have Rita Haney, and I've got a couple of other interviews lined up. It's going to be a great month. Yeah. Make sure you're subscribed, rate and review, all that fun stuff. And once again, just a huge thank you to Matt Hafey of Trivium for coming on. So for Talk To Me, the Metal Nexus podcast, I am Joshua Toomey.
I am John Drake.
And we will talk to you guys next week.